We're spending the hour on rural healthcare in Wisconsin here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. The Trump administration has released a rural action plan. It's a sweeping plan that aims to help stabilize financially strapped rural hospitals and give a funding boost to telehealth services. Hospitals are closing at a record rate. More than 170 rural hospitals have closed in our country since 2005. That's data from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Do you live in rural Wisconsin? How far must you travel to get to a hospital or clinic? How has healthcare changed for you since COVID? We're at 800-642-1234. Tim Size is executive director of the Rural Wisconsin Health Cooperative. It's owned and operated by 43 nonprofit general medical surgical hospitals. Tim, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate.
Well, there's this push by the Trump administration to address gaps in healthcare and other issues in rural America. What are your takeaways from this new rural action plan from the Department of Health and Human Services?
I think first is I'm very grateful that they're continuing and expanding their emphasis on rural health and the challenges we face. So that's much appreciated. I think, to be fair, some people have read the report and say it's largely hype. Others have read and found substance. I think a fair amount of the report actually is cataloging many good initiatives that they have already been doing to bring it before the public to remind them. And then, like you said, they have put an additional emphasis on telehealth and the need for broadband.
Yeah, telemedicine very much emphasized in this plan. It will provide more than $8 million in funding to support rural provider telehealth strategies over the next 4 years. What do you think of this whole telehealth push in rural areas?
Well, I think, as horrific as the pandemic has been, one of the good things is the federal government significantly loosened up a lot of the regulation around telehealth. So many more people have been able to experience it and adjust to how you do it. And so that's been a real blessing because I think people realize it really does add value, both from the patient side and the doctor or nurse's side. So that's very much to the good. We have major workforce challenges in rural Wisconsin. So to the degree that we can use telehealth to connect with clinicians that are not living in the rural community within some reason, that's also a good thing.
Oh, so expanding services there, telehealth could help with that. But
yes,
as you talk with hospital leaders in rural areas, how is telehealth functioning now in our communities? Is this sustainable long term?
I think it is, and certainly at the level it is at now, which is relatively low, increased with the pandemic, but still probably far below its potential. I do think it's very important sometimes to remember, because sometimes people tend to think of telehealth as a silver bullet that's going to take care of everything that's challenging rural communities and their ability to access healthcare. And that's simply not true. We still need, real three-dimensional clinics and hospitals. We need emergency care. We need EMS. We need workforce. Wisconsin has been very fortunate. I think the numbers of closures you cited, we had one around 15 years ago, and it was a conversion to a clinic. It's not that we don't need to be concerned and worry and prevent it from happening, but we have not been as hard hit as the rest of the country.
Yeah, that was really interesting looking at that map. Wisconsin has fared quite well compared certainly to states in the South. What are we doing differently here?
I like to think it's the co-op that's made a huge difference, but I don't know. I think truly the upper Midwest has the economy has been stronger in our area of the country than where we've seen a lot of the closures, although that is now very much something that's changing and that the co-op and others are beginning to address how we improve our rural economy so it can sustain a decent level of local health care. I also think there's a tradition of collaboration in the upper Midwest. We have many more hospitals work together, either like through a group like the co-op or the hospital association, or they have an affiliation with one of the major large hospital systems. I think we've had a strong university that's really supported an awful lot of what we need to do. So I guess we've just been doing a lot of the things right, some is just good fortune, and some has been very deliberate.
We're talking with Tim Size, who heads up the Rural Wisconsin Health Cooperative. We're discussing challenges in rural health care and the road going forward, taking your insights. Are you a healthcare worker who works at a rural hospital or clinic? What's work life been like during the pandemic? Does your facility have enough PPE? Does it have enough patients to sustain it long term? We're at 800-642-1234. You know, Tim, most rural hospitals are nonprofit institutions. How does that designation help hospitals being a nonprofit?
Well, I guess I have a bias working in Wisconsin since all our members are nonprofit. That is, in other parts of the country, that is not true. And so you'll have for-profits come in, buy up. They don't make the money they think they were going to make, and then they leave, and the community is left without a hospital. So I think what nonprofit to me means, in many, if not most cases, community-owned and operated, certainly historically. But even hospitals that are members of systems tend to have local advisory boards. But they all are part of, in our state, our community rural hospitals are part of nonprofit systems. So that really means that the focus is on maximizing the good you can do for the community rather than necessarily, if you're for-profit, maximizing return to the stockholder.
I want to return to the early days of the pandemic and the CARES Act stimulus dollars that had allocated $11 billion to hospitals and clinics. What did the stimulus do for hospitals in your cooperative?
Critically important. There were a number of different buckets of dollars. That was one bucket. Also, a lot of the general public's heard about the payroll protection program, which our smaller hospitals were able to take advantage of. It's basically made the difference of the hospitals, I think, being able to keep their doors open or not. The long-term impact on going forward, I don't think, is not clear yet. The story, I think, right before this show reminded us that COVID is alive and well in our state and probably at its highest levels. So we really don't know what the next few months are going to bring and how that may impact both our communities and our hospitals. I couldn't emphasize enough, so I'll sneak it in now and then maybe at the end, the importance of masking, social distancing, and people getting a flu shot, even if they've never gotten one, because we're heading into a time where the virus, COVID virus, and flu season overlap, which makes the job extremely difficult for the medical community, for nurses. And you basically have to assume someone's positive until you can prove otherwise. And we are short of PPE in many of our communities, so an increase in demand is not going to help that. We have major issues of access to testing in our rural communities, so again, a major influx isn't going to help. We are seeing the impact, unfortunately, of particularly college students going back and too much partying, and that's led to a huge surge. We don't yet know, fingers crossed, in terms of kids going back to public school. Your guess is as good as mine in terms of what the fall is going to look like. But medium and worst case scenarios are not pretty. We have to be prepared.
Tim Size heads up the Rural Wisconsin Health Cooperative. It includes 43 community hospitals around our state. Rural healthcare workers, is there a shortage of workers at your hospital or clinic? How has this affected your work during the pandemic? How is the shrinking population in rural areas affecting healthcare and access to services? Join in at any point, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Tim Size on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about challenges in rural healthcare here in Wisconsin. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Trump administration's Rural Action Plan says rural communities rely on a patchwork of small rural hospitals, clinics, small primary care practices, nursing homes, and physician practices for their health care needs. The National Rural Health Association told NPR last month that hundreds of rural hospitals were struggling to keep their doors open prior to the pandemic, and their income plummeted when patients avoided the ER, doctor's visits, and elective procedures due to COVID. Is a hospital an economic driver in your small town? What are your concerns about the economic hardship in rural areas from farm bankruptcies, business closures, and other challenges? Be part of this 800-642-1234. Tim Size is executive director of the Rural Wisconsin Health Cooperative, and he stays with us. So, Tim, you mentioned lack of PPE, lack of testing. What are rural hospitals seeing as far as COVID patients right now?
Increased from the early days, and some of our rural counties are at or greater than some of the more well-documented urban communities. But then there are other many rural counties that are relatively low, and that's part of the complexity, I think, of this whole situation. It's still very different around the state, although, as many people said, the virus doesn't know county lines, and it doesn't take long for a virus to spread, particularly, as you mentioned earlier, like 40% of people are asymptomatic. So we all need to be very vigilant whether or not we're currently in a county with a high rate, because in a week or two, those numbers can change very, very quickly.
What about access to testing? What does access look like for testing at rural facilities?
That's a big issue. I think the state and others have done a good job providing centralized testing resources. The problem is what people really need is in-house testing, and we just simply don't have the reagents for the laboratory equipment that we do have and anywhere near the amount that allows us to make full use. So that means if someone's tested, the tests are batched that day, they're sent by a courier to Exact Sciences or Marshfield Clinic or a commercial lab. They run the test, if they're not too overloaded, the next day, and then results kind of go out the following day. That's kind of best scenario when you're using a reference lab out of your community. But many reports where it's taken much longer when we've had a surge of testing. So what that means is, if you have had to put staff on furlough because they had a contact or a patient who's asymptomatic had a contact, they need to quarantine. So we have a lot more delay in finding out the status of a patient in our rural communities because we just simply don't have as much local testing.
Oh, and these delays can have direct consequences on your workforce and availability of people to be able to work.
Absolutely, because if an employee is suspected they may have had contact and become positive, they then have to be furloughed and then are not available to work until we get back, hopefully, a negative test. At the same time, too, if you have a patient that may have been infected and you haven't shown they're negative, you're wearing that scarce PPE, protective personal equipment. So it means we burn through a lot more of that because of the lag in testing.
In talking with the hospital leaders, how are they paying for this PPE?
Well, the federal dollars that have obviously helped our hospitals on average were in better shape than many other rural hospitals around the country as they went into this very challenging time, so they're spending reserves. We're kind of like in the middle of a tornado that's just lasting forever, and we don't really know the financial impact until it's over. And we're clearly at best kind of in the middle of this, at least probably until we get the much sought-after vaccine.
We're talking with Tim Size, who heads up the Rural Wisconsin Health Cooperative. We're looking at the challenges facing rural health care in Wisconsin. healthcare workers. Is there a shortage of workers at your hospital or clinic? Rural residents, did you have a non-elective procedure canceled during earlier months of COVID? Has it been rescheduled? What is it like to go back to your clinic, go back to your local hospital? Be part of this at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Tim Size, I'm wondering, with the dollars that are flowing into these hospitals, the Evers administration announced direct payments in June from the Department of Health Services to help with lost revenue. And it was the funding to help shore up lost revenue was based on the hospital's percentage of Medicaid revenue. What do you think of this type of funding formula to base it on Medicaid services?
Well, I think, as I said earlier, there's been various pots of funding, and I believe one of the initial pot was based on Medicaid, but subsequently they made some corrections with other pots of money to try to even things out. But basically, the Medicaid-only formula does and has disadvantaged Wisconsin.
In what way?
We just have a slightly lower than average proportion of spending. In terms of spending per capita, quite a bit less, but that's because of lower payment rates to providers. So in general, when you do a formula where you're distributing aid based on Medicaid expenditures, we get lower than our fair share.
Financial viability for these hospitals is also connected to what's called charge markups, and these charge markups are the amounts for services relative to the Medicare allowable cost. Can you give any insights on charge markups and what that does to a bottom line for a rural hospital?
I would frame it differently.
I would
say it's not a charge markup. I mean, our rural hospitals, before the pandemic and now they're making enough money to get by in general on average. And that's based on private commercial insurance charges. But Medicare pays all of our rural hospitals and all of our urban hospitals less than cost.
Mm-hmm.
And so it isn't so much that the private sector's charges are higher than what they should be. It's that the Medicare reimbursement is lower than cost. And if we were totally 100% Medicare, no one would be able to stay in business.
What is it like now to serve these patients and be able to, charge for these services and also keep your doors open?
Well, it was a struggle. As you mentioned earlier, back in pretty much from mid to March through early May, there was no so-called elective health care going on in our state. And so our hospitals for a couple of months, rural and urban, lost probably about as much as 70% of their typical revenue. So that was, in my 45 years working in healthcare in Wisconsin, an unprecedented amount of loss. Due to what was learned during the pandemic, those months of the pandemic, and as well as the trust that rural communities have in the rural hospitals, people have, by and large, come back. So our service levels are are close to where they were before. But that still leaves a relatively big hole financially in the hospitals. Much of that has been filled by the federal assistance. But one thing we don't know how much of that federal assistance will need to be paid back. There is a bill in Congress that will say for very vulnerable hospitals, they won't have to pay back where they got advance payments from Medicare. So there's a lot we don't know.
How has transportation affected healthcare delivery in rural parts of our state and getting to the hospital in the first place?
Well, that's an interesting and complex question. I think my first answer would be, remember, the transportation we're most in need of is our EMS system, which is quite literally falling apart because people are aging out of being volunteers. We have population loss from 2/3 of our rural counties. We have people that increasingly need to commute out of their rural home community to have work. All those things put extreme downward pressure on the number of people available to volunteer to staff the EMS system. So that's one huge, huge issue for rural. A second is obviously, as you know, rural is disproportionately older than the rest of the state, and at some time it's just not very practical for an older person to be driving because of what I just mentioned, lack of jobs. You have fewer children that have stayed in the community, so fewer people that are available to drive mom or dad, aunt or uncle, to care. So it's a significant issue, and it's not one easily resolved just due to how people are spread out around our rural communities.
Tim Size is explaining how rural hospitals are doing financially during the COVID crisis, the challenges ahead. He's executive director of the Rural Wisconsin Health Cooperative. Rural residents, did you have a non-elective procedure canceled in the past 6 months? Has it been rescheduled? What was it like going back to your clinic? Rural hospital administrators, how have you adjusted staffing levels and budgeting to stay in the black? It's 800-642-1234 to join in. We'll pick this up, maybe hear from you right after this news update here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing rural healthcare delivery and how hospitals and clinics are trying to stay open in these trying times. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Rural hospitals have long struggled because they serve smaller populations in areas that generally have higher poverty rates. And according to the National Rural Health Association, there were a record number of rural hospital closures last year. This year is on track for even more. Do you or a family member work for a rural hospital or clinic? Is it staying busy? Do you worry about it staying open? Join in with your questions, your insights, your perspective, 800-642-1234. Tim Size is executive director of the Rural Wisconsin Health Cooperative, and he stays with us. So, Tim, let's say you are a rural hospital with, 25 beds, 50 beds. What happens if there is a COVID outbreak in the region that you serve and there aren't enough beds?
Well, good question. Statewide, we've been fortunate. There was some extreme pressure, I think, in Milwaukee, where capacity got pretty stressed. Elsewhere in the state, I think we've been able to manage. I know currently our inpatient population related to COVID statewide and locally in I think all localities is below our capacity. So far, so good. I think to answer your question more specifically, we do in Wisconsin, urban to rural, rural to urban, we know how to transfer patients when necessary. And I think if the worst case scenario came and we had an explosion of cases, you would see like we did late last winter, all sort of elective admissions would be stopped and to make room. And then we would also probably we'd be forced to transfer patients to areas that were less hard hit. And there are mechanisms in place to do that.
Outside of COVID, what are the trend lines on transferring patients to larger medical centers in more urban areas?
I'm sorry, what kind of lines?
What are the trend lines? What do you see on transfers there, COVID aside?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't have that data in front of me. It's just a long-established pattern. We obviously have made significant investments in rural health, and one of the reasons is to avoid having to refer someone into a larger community. There are trade-offs. There's care that is more unusual and is needed, and you're not going to have that local volume, so it just makes sense that you go into La Crosse or Madison or Milwaukee or for that care. But an awful lot of care is and can be provided at a high quality in our rural areas. So I think it's been stable. I don't think it's it has been increasing. I think rural hospitals have held their own in that regard.
You know, we were talking earlier with the head of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation about rural issues and had a call from a physician's assistant in rural Juneau County trying to work from home, but with the lack of broadband and even the lack of an ability to get cell phone reception, that is making it really difficult. When you look at the issue of broadband, how is that holding back rural health care?
It's a huge issue. And we our main office and training center is in Sauk County. And so we have a lot of people in many different communities who actually either work at a local hospital or commute into Sauk pre-COVID to work. And some have no broadband. Some have great broadband, particularly if they're in, you know, a downtown area of a rural community. I think it's generally believed statewide and nationally that improving broadband is job number one to improve the rural community. I'm sorry, the rural economy and then consequently the rural community. I think particularly now, post-COVID, we're going to see an awful lot more acceptance of people working from home. And that is a great opportunity for rural Wisconsin because there's all sorts of reasons people like to live in rural. And one of the downsides is, well, if you can't get work, you really can't live there. But now with telecommuting, that's going to really open up a lot of opportunities for rural Wisconsin if we make the appropriate investments in broadband.
Well, and you can't really fully deliver telemedicine across Wisconsin without your patients having access to the internet and broadband specifically.
I agree. And I guess what I'm saying, as important or maybe even more important to the health of our rural communities, is the ability to have broadband for non-healthcare reasons so that people can work from home so we can recruit people to live and prosper in our rural communities. And that so much more of our work experience is going to be online, working from home, and that opens up tons of opportunities. So that brings people into our rural communities. It creates more vitality. It creates the patient base to keep our clinics and hospitals open.
We're talking with Tim Size, who heads a rural health co-op. It includes 43 nonprofit general medical surgical hospitals across our state. We're discussing rural health care and how small hospitals are getting by. With your insights, your questions at 800-642-1234. Tim, you know, as you look at the economic situation in rural areas, the massive amount of historically high farm bankruptcies, Main Street's really struggling, Main Street businesses trying to stay open, how connected are local hospitals and local clinics to the larger economic situation in the communities they serve?
Well, you just hit on one of my passions, and we have members that have been getting over the last 5-7 years much more involved. I think there's an opportunity for all of our members to become more involved. I think of rural hospitals as anchor institutions in our communities. And the co-op is embarked on a major initiative, and it's kind of my primary focus right now, in addition to all those things we've been talking about, is that we can be better partners with other sectors, with the business community, the faith community, schools, entrepreneurs, and sit down and basically community by community ask that question, what can we do to keep investments in our community, to keep spending in our community, to create jobs? We have a desperate shortage of, and this is kind of counterintuitive for a lot of people, housing, worker housing in our rural communities. Child care is a major issue, even more so now with the pandemic, but it was before. We used to talk about the Great Recession back in, you know, that was back in 2008, 12, and unfortunately, I guess we're back in another Great Recession, but we really only maybe a year ago came out, caught up to the jobs we had back in 2008. And now a lot of those jobs have been lost. So a hospital can be doing great work, but if its community is dying through a lack of opportunity, a lack of jobs, people out migrating into urban areas, that hospital is going to die. So I just see an extreme close correlation between, if you want a strong rural hospital, the rural hospital has to help by working with others to create a stronger community.
What are some of the specifics there? Have hospital leaders had meetings with the business community and the faith community and other sectors of Main Street? And what has come about from those meetings?
Well, I think many of our rural communities have been long involved in economic development with help from WIDA, as you mentioned. I think the governor's Blue Ribbon Commission on rural prosperity is asking exactly that question, and I'm looking forward to their report. Their director of the Office of Rural Prosperity is going to be meeting with our board in about 2.5 weeks. So I think what's happening, we're at a kind of early days yet of people engaging, but I think some of the best business talent and resources in many of our rural communities resides in our hospital. So it's them taking some ownership of partnering with others to make the schools stronger, to help recruit entrepreneurs. I'm involved with a project with one of our members and another agency to get state support for increased housing for employees at the hospital. So it's the hospital partnering with others in their communities to help grow the resources around housing, around daycare, around broadband initiatives, all the key building blocks of the economy is fair game for a local community to work on. And part of the role of the co-op will be to help our members understand what's available both federally and nationally. And then also, which is something we've historically always done with the co-op, is network with each other, best practices. So an administrator in one community that's like been very active is one I can think of, bringing mental health services into schools to make the school stronger. They share those best practices with their colleagues around the table at the co-op.
You mentioned housing. What are the challenges around rural housing? There's a lot of land.
Yeah. When I first heard that, that's exactly what I said. Why is that an issue? Well, first of all, the jobs in the building industry have been in our urban areas. So to get someone to bid on a smaller project when there have been over the last good number of years just a building boom in Madison and other big cities, that's a problem. A lot of our farmland is rich in the community. I can think of one community near Madison that's basically totally surrounded by rich farmland, so no one's eager to sell that property. And then you get into issues of financing. There's less capital. Banks and foundations both have underinvested in our rural communities, so getting the capital for a housing project is harder. But this is something actually I can tell you I don't know as much about as I will, but it's on my to-do list.
Rural health is the focus here with Tim Size. He's with the Rural Wisconsin Health Cooperative as its executive director. Rural healthcare workers, are you concerned about what the future holds for your hospital or clinic? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about rural health care and what the future holds with Tim Size. He leads the Rural Wisconsin Health Cooperative. It's a network of 43 community hospitals. And even before COVID struck, the rural health care system was struggling nationwide. Over the past decade, more than 130 rural hospitals have closed. That's according to health researchers at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Tim, the one area you haven't really fleshed out for us is the issue of childcare. And for a hospital staff worker to go to work who has a child, they need to secure that childcare. What is that like in a rural area?
It's been thin. I think in our larger communities, there have been more opportunities for larger daycares to be created. I think the tradition in our rural communities has been smaller, informal, which makes them more vulnerable during a pandemic. It's complicated by the concern around the virus. Parents can be uncomfortable putting their kid in daycare, which then takes away income. We have our child care workers across the state. I think general opinion is are underpaid, frequently don't have ready access to health insurance. So it's more challenging for them to put themselves at risk in terms of working so closely with potentially infected individuals. So I think my understanding is that the child care sector has been one of the hardest hit, urban and rural, statewide, due to the pandemic.
As we've been discussing, there are so many challenges that are in front of you. Where do you put your focus with the co-op and your colleagues?
Well, I think if you're drawn to be at a rural co-op like I am, or a rural nurse, doctor, administrator, you have kind of a smorgasbord appetite. We really don't have the luxury of focus. I did mention, I have several. I've historically worked a lot with the National Rural Health Association, which you mentioned, also Washington, and now more recently begun to focus a larger amount of my time on local community and economic development. But to be in rural health, and that's what's so exciting for me, and it's why I haven't retired, and is that it's so interesting because it's so complex. And, you know, you've asked so many different interesting questions today, and we're really just scratching the surface of rural health. So I guess you have to be comfortable with ambiguity and with that smorgasbord.
On the other side of COVID, when there is a vaccine, will rural health care go back to doing what it was doing? Do you think that the times we're in will forever change rural America?
I think it will be forever changed, and I speak not just rural America, but our country. Whether we come through this stronger, more united, or more divided, I think is an open question. The one thing I am a little bit more sure of, and it's why I mentioned masking, social distancing, and flu shot, and is I think rural, while we were slower going into the full force of the pandemic, we may be slower leaving it. There's a fair amount of information out there that the people who are behind anti-masking and anti-vaccine are also not big fans of the hope for COVID vaccine. And so I'm expecting a lower pickup of fewer people being vaccinated in our rural communities, which will mean that our businesses and our healthcare will be hobbled with the risk of COVID, I think, longer than some other communities. We also have anticipate some distribution problems with the vaccine. What I know of the vaccine so far that are soon to be available, that there's some requirements for keeping them extremely cold, which is a capacity we don't have in our rural communities. So there's going to be probably some distribution challenges that urban doesn't have that rural will have. So again, I'm an optimist by nature, and I know we will get through this. I am concerned, though, it may take rural a bit longer to get through it.
As you look ahead toward flu season, how will flu season affect rural hospitals as the pandemic rages on?
I would say it's in the hands of our communities, and that's why I just keep pleading with everyone to get a flu shot. I know in Wisconsin and nationally, I think the figure of people who typically get flu shots is only around 30%, and we have to be up around 70 or 80%. Because the problem is flu, if you get the flu, you're going to look like you have COVID. And so that means doctors and nurses, families, everyone's going to have to assume you are positive until you get tested negative. And so it has the potential, if we don't all get flu shots, to really overwhelm the healthcare system. So it's just absolutely critical for our communities, our healthcare, ourselves, to get those flu shots, even if you've never gotten one in your whole life.
We're talking with Tim Size, Executive Director of the Rural Wisconsin Health Cooperative. We're discussing how small town hospitals and clinics are serving broad swaths of our state and the challenges going ahead. Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Tim, in these times of working remotely and trying to carry on the work of the co-op, how do you bring people together for whether it's education, whether it's meetings? How are you making it in these times?
Zoom.
One word, Zoom.
Yeah, huh? We were lucky. We converted to Zoom right about a month before the pandemic. Also, our model of networking rural healthcare folks around the state has always been very dependent on strong telenetworking. So in some ways, it was business as usual. It's just a lot more. And so, like, our board has always been a combination of virtual and face-to-face. And now, like, just Friday, we had, like, 40 people, board and staff, on Zoom for 2 hours. And we just keep doing it. And our the co-op is a mix of essential, where people have to be in the office, and others like me that can largely work virtually. But I do go in once a week just to make sure things are okay. So I think it's like so much of rural health and so much in healthcare, we've adapted. I do miss seeing people in three dimensions. And if after you've been on Zoom for 10 or 12 hours, there's a whole different kind of fatigue I've never experienced. But the technology is helping us, not just to telehealth, but helping us continue to be in touch and talk and learn from each other.
As you talk with the hospital leaders in rural areas, what kind of outcomes are they seeing from people who go to the hospital and have a hospital stay due to COVID?
I think what I've heard consistently is they're seeing people with more severe health issues, because people by and large have been wanting to just stay at home and not get mixed up with this COVID thing. And so in our emergency room, the cases tend to be more serious. People are being admitted with different illnesses, a little bit more sicker. So I think one message is our rural hospitals, our urban hospitals, have become expert in dealing safely with the virus. So people should not be postponing needed care.
Oh, because as people stay home more, whatever condition they do have, it worsens, and then they're not presenting until it's maybe almost too late.
Yes, they're certainly later than
they should.
Right.
Yeah, and certainly this will also probably change preventative care as well, which was also in its own type of crisis before the pandemic, with people putting off their medical visits.
Yeah, we as a country are not strong on prevention, and during this period of time, we didn't get stronger, we got weaker.
Well, Tim, as we wrap up here, if you could leave us with one glimmer of hope, what keeps you going?
Well, for me personally, I've never felt more needed. I originally thought I would be like a fifth wheel, but it turns out policy and networking is important during a pandemic.
Tim, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Tim Size is Executive Director of the Rural Wisconsin Health Cooperative. It's an organization owned and operated by 43 nonprofit rural hospitals. Just ahead, the race to develop a vaccine to combat the coronavirus has been raging for months, while companies and countries around the world have been making progress and have been moving at historic speeds. It's hard to say when the vaccine will be widely available. 1A looks at that next. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.